Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a very good morning to you. This is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. It is Judaism 101.9. It is just gone 11:11 on this wet Wednesday morning, but wonderful to be able to share some thoughts with you, and especially for this week. It is a very special week, and you may have heard me say that before. Every week is special, but this one has got something really phenomenal about it, and I'd like to tell you about that as we begin today, and that is that, you know, the children of Israel, B'nai Yisrael, began building the Mishkan, the tabernacle, in the desert, which was a portable sanctuary, a house of God in their midst as they journeyed through the desert. And on the 11th of Tishrei of the year 2449, which was 1312 before the Common Era, they began this construction. This was 6 months after the Exodus from Egypt. It was 4 months after they had received the Torah at Mount Sinai, and 80 days after the worship of the golden calf. The construction of the Mishkan, this tabernacle, followed a detailed set of instructions that was issued to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Moses, on Mount Sinai, and it lasted for 74 days. So, it turns out it was completed on the 25th of Kislev, which we celebrate as Hanukkah, of course. But the divine command to erect the Mishkan came only 3 months later, which was, believe it or not, the 23rd of Adar. That is today. The 23rd of Adar was the day on which Hashem commanded B'nai Yisrael, the Jewish people, through Moshe Rabbeinu, to begin a 7-day training period. And during the week of the 23rd to the 29th of Adar, this week, starting from today, the Mishkan was erected each morning, and it was dismantled each evening. Moshe served as the high priest, and then he initiated Aaron and his four sons into the priesthood. And then on the 8th day, the 1st of Nisan, which comes up towards the end of next week, the Mishkan was permanently assembled. So it was put up to stand until the divine command would come to journey on. So in other words, it stood there. When we moved, it came down, and it was dismantled and re-erected wherever it was that we camped. But it became, let's call it, a semi-permanent feature. And then Aaron and his sons assumed the priesthood, and the divine presence came to dwell in the Mishkan. So the beginning of this 7-day period of putting up and taking down, kind of the practice runs, the way to see how everything all fitted together and that it was ready for the service of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, began today, lasted for this week. So we're talking about a week starting from today in which we really are reliving, or the energy of the time is reliving, this idea of the putting up and getting ready for the service of the Mishkan, the service in the tabernacle, which started in earnest on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is going to be this time next week. Now, isn't it amazing how this comes now at the end of the month of Adar, preparing us for Nisan? And that is what this period of time is really all about. Yeah, it's not only the idea, I guess, right now of getting used to the fact that Pesach is just around the corner, that we need to make sure that we're starting to see to it that we don't drop crumbs all over the house and we start cleaning and getting our Pesach kitchens ready and dusted, and start preparing all the things that we can do in advance. And of course, the shopping, of course, who can forget the shopping? But it's a period of time of the putting up and getting ready for the service of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, which is significant and important at this time. The 24th of Adar, which is going to be tomorrow, There was an amazing thing that happened on the 24th of Adar in history, and that was in 1817, on the 24th of Adar, Tsar Alexander I of Russia declared the blood libel, the accusation that Jews murdered Christian children to use their blood for baking in Pesach Matzah, which thousands of Jews were massacred throughout the centuries. He declared them to be false. Nevertheless, nearly 100 years later, the accusation was officially leveled against Mendel Baylis in Kiev, even though Tsar Alexander I in 1817 had actually declared it to be a baba maisa, a nonsense. And yes, blood libels of perhaps in a different guise have reared their ugly heads again recently. The 25th of Adar, which is going to be on Shabbos, is the day of the passing of Nebuchadnezzar in 397 before the Common Era. The Babylonian emperor who conquered Jerusalem, destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, the first temple, 26 years later, he died. And his date of death was the 25th of Adar in the year 3364 from creation. But it also happens to mark the day in 1901 of the birthday of the Rebbetzin Chaya Mushka Schneerson. She was born in 1901. She passed away in 1988. She was the wife of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. She was born on a Shabbos. It was the 25th of Adar, like it would be this year. Born in Babinovich, a town near the Russian city of Lubavitch. And in an address delivered on the 25th of Adar in 1988, the Rebbetzin's 87th birthday, and about a month after her passing, the Rebbe initiated an international birthday campaign, urging people to celebrate their birthdays and utilize the day, the time of introspection and making resolutions involving an increase in good deeds. So, fascinating, beautiful. It is also the Shabbos of this coming Shabbat, where we read Parshat HaChodesh, which we'll talk a little bit more about in the next segment of today's show. If we go to Sunday, the 26th of Adar, this marked in 1677 the purchase of a property. What was this property all about? It was in 1658 that 15 Jewish families emigrated to South America. 15 Jewish families emigrated from South America to the United States, to North America, and they were of Sephardi lineage. Together they settled in Newport, Rhode Island, where they established a Jewish congregation. For many years they held weekly prayer services in private homes, but they bought a property when the need arose for a Jewish cemetery. They purchased land on the 28th of February in 1677, the first known purchase of Jewish property in the United States, and it became known for that 26th of Adar, that we have the purchase of that property and the settlement of Jews in the United States.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and welcome back. We've been going through a little bit of the history of this period of time. Fascinating to note that this is the week of the putting up and practice runs for the Mishkan, very first temple, very first tabernacle that was built in the desert when the Jewish people got out of Egypt. And so before we get to Pesach, we're actually reliving in this week the after story, after we received the Torah, after we had been at Mount Sinai, now bringing God into the dwelling place that we needed to create down here on earth, the putting up and getting ready with the tabernacle. It's quite fascinating that it overlays and it is the foundation, the root of this period of time. But if we go forward to Monday, the 27th of Adar, it is the day of the passing of King Zedekiah. Zedekiah was the last king of the royal house of David to reign in the Holy Land. He ascended to the throne in 434, before the Common Era, after King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon exiled Yechoniah, Zedekiah's nephew, to Babylon. And in 425, Zedekiah rebelled against that's 425 before the Common Era, Zedekiah rebelled against Babylonian rule. Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to Jerusalem, and in the summer of 423 before the Common Era, the walls of Jerusalem were penetrated, city conquered, holy temple destroyed, and the people of Yehuda were exiled to Babylon. Zedekiah tried escaping through a tunnel leading out of the city. Amazing that they had tunnels then, and he was captured. His sons were killed before his eyes, and then he was blinded. Zedekiah languished in the royal dungeon in Babylon until Nebuchadnezzar's death in 397 before the Common Era. And it is amazing that Zedekiah actually died on that same day. If we then go just one day further forward to Tuesday, the 28th of Adar, there was the decree against ritual circumcision that was rescinded in the second century. In Talmudic times, 28th of Adar used to be celebrated to commemorate the rescinding of a Roman decree against ritual circumcision, Torah study and keeping Shabbos. The decree was revoked, the Talmud tells us, through the efforts of Rabbi Yehuda ben Shammua and his fellow rabbis. There was also a Purim that was celebrated on the 28th of Adar in Cairo, and this dated back to 1524. Ahmed Pasha was the governor of Egypt under the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, and he plotted to secede from the Ottoman Empire and declare himself Sultan of Egypt. He requested of his Jewish minister, Avraham ben Castro, to mint new Egyptian currency stamped with his image. Instead, de Castro went to Constantinople and informed Selim II of Ahmed's plot. Ahmed decided to exact revenge against Cairo's Jewish community, imprisoning many of its leaders and threatening to execute them unless he was paid a huge amount of money. The Jews of Cairo fasted and prayed to God, and a huge sum of money was collected, but it did not come near what Ahmed had demanded. And before the planned executions, Ahmed visited his bathhouse. As he was leaving the bathhouse, he was attacked and severely wounded by a group of his own advisors and governors. He escaped, but was later captured and put to death. And then the Jews of Cairo observed the 28th of Adar as a day of celebration, because that's when this all went down. And a special Megillah, a special scroll, was written to commemorate the miracle, which was read in Cairo every year on this day. So believe it or not, if you're in Cairo, the 28th of Adar is celebrated as a Purim of their own. Now, it was on the 29th of Adar, shortly before sundown, that God commanded Moshe Rabbeinu regarding Moses was told about the mitzvah of sanctifying the crescent new moon and establishing a lunar calendar. It is the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people as a nation. So think about it. 29th of Adar, coming up next week, Wednesday, less than a week from now, 29th of Adar, before Rosh Chodesh, before that first Rosh Chodesh of Nisan, when we were about to quit Egypt. This is the first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people. So what is this all about? Because it does have a great effect on the upcoming Shabbat. On this coming Shabbos, we do declare the new moon. So in other words, it is called the Shabbos Mevarchim. It's a Shabbos on which we bless that new moon, saying the Birkat HaChodesh in our davening. Many people say the entire book of Tehillim, of Psalms, in preparation for the advent of the new month, and to give it extra energy, extra spiritual input from our words of Tehillim. And it is a great day in and of itself, but there is also the reading of a special Torah portion, which is HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. So this Shabbat coming up is known as Shabbat HaChodesh. Besides the fact that it is a parsha, double parsha, Vayakel and Pekudei, and we come to the end of the book of Shmot, that we now have completed that Mishkan, that tabernacle, all the accounts are done and so on, that we spoke about as the overlay of this week, the 23rd to the 29th of Adar, the final putting up of that Mishkan and getting ready for its service to commence on Rosh Chodesh. We have also the Shabbat Mevarachim of Shabbat HaChodesh. We read Shabbat HaChodesh. We read the portion of the instruction to the Jewish people of HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, that this had to be a significant new moon, a significant structure of how our Jewish calendar actually works. So if you want to know what it was that the Jewish people were instructed as a people first to do, it was to remember HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, to have a calendar, to have a system of dates, a system of a calendar that functions according to the moon, but of course takes in mind the sun as well, because Pesach has to always be in the spring in Israel. And that is, of course, determined by the seasons of the sun. So unlike some who have their calendar only running according to the sun, our regular secular calendar, which really has very little to do with the moon other than the fact that we call it a month, which has got the significance of going back to the word moon, moon and month. You get it? Same word. It doesn't really line up with the cycles of the moon. And therefore it is all a solar-based calendar. And then there are those who go entirely on a lunar calendar. And with the lunar calendar, their days will always be receding within the secular year. It will get earlier and earlier each year. That is the way that they run their calendars. But ours actually has a combination of both. But we're given the instruction of how the calendar should work on this coming Shabbat in the portion that we read, and it was given to us on the 29th of Adar, which is going to come in the coming week, before Rosh Chodesh, of course, which is later next week. And we have this idea of the calendar, the system, and the fact that we have to have our calendar set up according to the lunar month. So the moon becomes a great symbol of the waxing and waning of the entire existence of Am Yisrael, of the Jewish people. And we think about the various things that the moon has a part to play in. You know, it's always fascinating when you go down to the seaside that the moon has a relevance when it comes to the tides. So the moon affects the waters of the world, but it's not only the actual waters of the world, but it also affects things that, like the body clocks of women. It is affected by the moon. Isn't this an amazing thing? And we often come, I don't know about anybody else, but I have difficulty in wrapping my head around the fact that the gravity of the moon has an effect on the tides down here. It seems to be almost beyond something physical. There is a very, very spiritual energy, an idea that is conveyed by the waxing and the waning of the moon, and not the least of which is that the moon is a light in a dark sky. And the light in the dark sky is very significant when it comes to our thought about the role of Jews in the world. We are meant to be that light unto the nations. Within the darkness, we've got to bring light. Within the horrors of things that are thrust upon us around the world, and that always have been, and even today, where there is absolute darkness and a dearth of knowledge and understanding of what Judaism and Jews are actually truly all about, it is for us as Jews to think about the role that the moon plays. That yes, it may wax and wane, and yes, it may feel like it is weaker at times and stronger at others, and yes, it may seem to recede and become more powerful in its brilliance and its brightness towards the middle of the month. Nevertheless, the moon in and of itself is a great ideal of what Jews and Judaism truly are meant to aspire to. And we think about, on a different level, the idea of the fact that the moon is the humbler of the two luminaries that God placed into the sky, the sun and the moon. Yeah, there is a whole discussion about the fact that maybe originally they were meant to be the same size, but in a way, the moon took its value of humility and encapsulated that in itself as this luminary, which is there sometimes a little weaker, sometimes a little stronger, but it's consistency there from day to day, changing, evolving from month to month, getting back to where it was, where it should be. This is a system of our ebb and flow of our whole nature and feeling of reality within the world that we have. Yeah, the arrogant sun, so to speak, rises every morning and comes and says, "Hi, I'm here." But yeah, then the clouds can come and the rain can come and it can be clouded over and you don't see the brilliance of the sun. But yet we know that it is there and it's consistent and it's constant and it has this great amount of energy that could really power the entire world and never get any weaker. The moon, a little more fragile, a little more real, a little more emotional. And yes, monitoring that ebb and flow. But that doesn't mean that Judaism negates the power of the sun. On the contrary, it is very, very relevant to us. And we think about this system of, and the brilliant system of our Jewish calendar when it comes to Parshat HaChodesh, the instruction that Jews have that we need to remember significant dates. We need to think about the power of and the energy of a particular time and its relevance for us. And we need to look back and say, God, we are looking at the advent of this month of Nisan as the greatest feat that you ever pulled off for us, getting us out of Egypt, out of slavery, with great miracles and wonders. And you took us across the Red Sea and you brought us to Mount Sinai. And then you took us through the desert, albeit that it lasted 40 years, but that wasn't your fault, it was ours. And eventually we arrived at our promised land, at the holy land of Eretz Yisrael, and there to be able to integrate, to look at the moon and the sun and be able to live our lives according to this significant and special calendar. Unlike the nations of the world, our Shabbat is on a day that is different to all the other nations of the world. Our Chagim, our festivals, different to all the other nations of the world. And why? Because HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, this is for you, my dear beloved Jewish people, a special system, a special calendar, and we need to adhere to it whenever we possibly can. Not just at the time that we mark a Yahrzeit, but perhaps most significantly, for birthdays, for anniversaries, special times. Our Jewish calendar should be uppermost in our mind, and we should keep to it just like we do when it comes to Pesach and Shavuot and Sukkot, as well as significant dates in the Jewish calendar. They should have more of a bearing upon us.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
One of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moses battled with when God gave him the instruction about HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, was he had difficulty envisaging the moon's appearance at the exact moment of its monthly rebirth. How do we determine what was the exact view, what's the exact vision, what's the exact image of the moon for Rosh Chodesh? So, it says that after sunset, Hashem showed him the crescent new moon of the new month of Nisan. So that would be next week. Showing him the precise dimensions of the moon at the moment the new moon is to be consecrated. For the generations that followed, each new moon was ushered in with two witnesses who testified before the Sanhedrin, before the Rabbinic Supreme Court, that they had seen what was known as the Molad. The Molad, from the word Yeled, Valad, birth. They had seen the Molad, the exact moment of the new moon coming into being. From this inherited image that Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moses had been shown by God, an image that was only reserved for or instructed to or known by some select people, and they had to serve as these witnesses. And they would come in and they would tell the Sanhedrin, we are here to testify that we have seen the Molad. We have seen this moment of the new moon, the actual new moon appearing over Yerushalayim. Now, this was something that unfortunately fell away because in the 4th century of the Common Era, Hillel II foresaw that the Jews would no longer be able to follow a Sanhedrin-based calendar without the Sanhedrin, without the Beit HaMikdash, without all of those things. So he and his rabbinical court established a perpetual calendar, which is still followed today. The calendar as we know it, followed and instructed, and say, yes, you can look up the Molad, you can look up the time of the sighting of the new moon as it would be according to the instruction given to Moshe. We have it perpetual. We've got it running until Mashiach will come. And when Mashiach will come, there will be the reestablishment of the Sanhedrin, and we'll undoubtedly revert to the idea of having it done by the witnesses, not having it so predictable. So, yeah, you can go on the internet right now. You can look up the Molad, the exact time of the sighting of the new moon over Yerushalayim for months and years and even decades ahead, as well as past. And you can see exactly how that pattern works and where it exactly is. But we're going to revert when we have a Sanhedrin, when Mashiach comes, to the witnesses who will go and check it out, come in and inform everybody. I'm not sure if they're going to still have the system of having to light fires on hilltops to send the message from one hilltop to the next, so that people outside of Israel may not know if they got the message from the fires today or yesterday, and thus the birth of the whole system of a second day of a chag, of a second day of a Yom Tov, because of what is known as Sveika de Yoma, the doubt about the days of on which we celebrate our chagim. It all comes from this sighting of the Molad by the witnesses and the way that they sent that message out. So please God, when Mashiach comes, will perhaps make use of something faster and quicker than those fires on hilltops. But undoubtedly, we will still have the Sanhedrin establishing when Rosh Chodesh is. Be back with you to sum up right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
So we are into a great and exciting and wonderful week, the week of the 23rd to the end of the month of Adar. And the overlay of it, while usually and very often towards the end of a month, we kind of have the month sort of dipping. There's the excitement of build-up to the middle of the month, and it was usually regarded as like a happier time of the month in the earlier part of most Jewish months. Of course, there are one or two exceptions, but most Jewish months, the earlier part until the middle is kind of the most exciting. When it comes to this month of Adar, while, yes, of course, the middle of the month has Purim in it, and Purim, of course, the fast of Esther on the 13th and the 14th being Purim, and then Shushan Purim on the 15th of Adar, we head into the latter part of the month of Adar from the 23rd till the 29th, seeing out the month with a great deal of excitement, of looking forward not only to the advent of Nisan, the beginning of the month in which our redemption began, but, of course, the preparation. And it's all about that preparation. I have a feeling, and I think that most would agree with me, that if you haven't prepared, you haven't cleaned a house, your kids haven't seen you scrubbing and cleaning and so on and participating in it, we haven't really felt what Pesach is truly all about. But here was something more constructive, getting ready with the Mishkan, with the tabernacle. It was put up on a regular basis every day of that week, and standing there ready for service until eventually the instruction came on Rosh Chodesh Nisan that it should kick in, that Aaron was appointed as the high priest and everything should start in earnest, and the establishment of this great connection or greater connection between God and Am Yisrael and the Jewish people for perpetuity was actually commenced. It is something incredible, and we have this playing out in the theme of this last week. There's the excitement of the coming of the month of Nisan. There is Shabbat HaChodesh. There is the preparation for Rosh Chodesh. There is the idea of how we run our calendar, how our times are different to the times of every other nation in the world, how our Shabbos are different, how our appreciation of time is different. You know, we know as Jews that every mitzvah counts and every second counts and every moment counts and every day is significant and every hour and every week. It is hugely significant and we dare not waste a moment of it. And this special time now in building up to the month of Nisan is real power. It is really, really a significant time for us to understand how important it is for us to get ready, to be ready for the month of Nisan, not just in our Pesach preparations, although that helps a lot, but in our minds, in our hearts, in the fact that we are proud of the fact that we are different, that we're looking forward on a daily basis, on a momentary basis, to being better, doing things better, learning more, being more involved, being more connected, and looking forward to the geula, to the redemption that Nisan will bring, to the geula that Pesach will bring, and of course to the geula, the redemption that will come when Mashiach will arrive. I will look forward to being back with you same time, same place next week, and want to wish you a great Shabbat up ahead and a great last few days of Adar as we do our count up to Rosh Chodesh and to the month of Nisan. Be back with you, as I said, same time, same place next week on another exciting episode of Judaism 101.9.